You're listening to Accounting Best Practices, the podcast that covers the latest in accounting standards and management. Your host is Steve Bragg, CPA. He's an accounting author and the CFO of a public company. Stay tuned as Steve covers accounting best practices.
This is Steve Bragg, and welcome to episode 44. This is part two of a five-part series on throughput accounting. And today's topic is bottleneck management. If you've not listened to the first podcast in the series, which is episode 43, then you might want to do it now because it defines some of the terms that I use in this episode. Now, the first step in managing the bottleneck is to figure out where it is. In a complex environment, it can actually be difficult to find. Here are some indicators. First, figure out where there's a work backlog. This should be an area that absolutely never catches up with demand. If it involves a manufacturing process, then there should be a pile of inventory in front of it. But don't think that this is an absolute way to find the bottleneck, because it could just mean that the preceding workstation is super efficient, and it's dumping all kinds of work on the next workstation in line, which doesn't necessarily make it the bottleneck. Another bottleneck indicator is that the maintenance staff is always hovering around a work center. This is because it's being operated at way beyond its normal run rate, so the equipment tends to break down much more often. Or, if the bottleneck is a person, such as a salesperson, look for people who never have any time to take vacation or participate in meetings. And the ultimate indicator of a bottleneck is when it stops working for a while, and all of a sudden company profits sink like a stone. It's also possible to deliberately designate a work center as the bottleneck, even if it currently is not the bottleneck. You might want to do this if the work center requires really expensive equipment or highly paid staff. So you cut back on the investment or headcount in that area, and now it's your bottleneck. So let's assume that you've targeted the bottleneck. So what do you do with it? The main point to remember is that the bottleneck should operate at all times. With this goal in mind, you can make sure that it operates around the clock, and that all employee breaks are covered by replacement personnel. Or, if there has to be downtime for machine maintenance, then schedule it during an employee break period, so that you can overlap two potential downtime periods. Also, there's usually some downtime when there's a shift changeover, so schedule the incoming staff to arrive a little early, so that you can have two production crews in the work center at the same time. With a scheduled overlap, there's no reason for changeover downtime. The next recommendation is a big one because it applies everywhere, not just in the production area. If there are employees involved in the bottleneck, make absolutely certain that they're doing nothing but running that operation. They should not be doing maintenance or cleanup or filling out time reports or anything. This is really useful for bottlenecks located elsewhere in the company, such as salespeople or engineers, because they should have administrative support people who handle absolutely everything non-essential for them. That means the admin schedules meetings for the bottleneck person, answers their voicemails and emails, brings in lunch, whatever it takes. The point is to strip away absolutely every activity that keeps that bottleneck person from processing work. Another way to improve the bottleneck is to review incoming materials for quality issues just in front of the bottleneck. This strips away any materials that would otherwise be processed through the bottleneck and then eventually be thrown away anyways. Also, be sure to reduce employee turnover at the bottleneck operation. If it's a boring operation, then raise wages to make sure that people show up for work. Better yet, cross-train a number of people so that you can easily drop other employees into the bottleneck on short notice if you need to. And another point, if you have an underutilized person sitting around in the bottleneck operation and the cost accountants tell you they're costing too much money, you should keep employing those folks and tell the cost accountants to go pound sand. Chances are, any part-timer in the bottleneck area is still creating so many incremental throughput dollars that it would be foolish to pull them away from the operation. And I'm not done yet. You can also offload excess work from the bottleneck to a backup operation within the company, even if the backup is way less efficient than the main operation. This is a key point because everyone focuses on the efficiency of an operation and not its throughput, so they assume an inefficient operation loses money. It's not true. In most cases, you can break loose a few employees from other operations to work on a backup work center. And since you were paying them already anyways, there's no incremental cost to having that extra work center. So even though it may appear inefficient, it can create a lot of extra throughput dollars. This also says something about keeping old equipment lying around. If you can put an old clunker to work as a bottleneck backup, then do it. Don't scrap the equipment. Another option is to outsource the work. As long as the throughput generated from outsourced work exceeds the incremental outsourcing cost, then this is a viable option. You can also improve the bottleneck just by changing work rules. For example, the upstream workstation might have a batch sizing rule which says that it must fill up a crate with parts before sending it on to the bottleneck, where they may have already run out of work. Instead, install a conveyor belt between the two operations and send parts over one at a time. Or cut the size of the crate in half. Just do whatever it takes to reduce the artificial buildup of inventory before it moves to the bottleneck. Another work rule may be to never pay for the rush delivery of parts. Well, tough. Always pay for a rush delivery, because the cost of the delivery is usually way lower than the throughput you'd otherwise lose by shutting down the bottleneck. And the same thing goes for overtime. If it takes overtime pay to run the bottleneck, then pay the overtime. You can also focus on the operations in front of the bottleneck. For example, if the upstream workstation sometimes falls behind and doesn't deliver inventory to the bottleneck in time, then invest in an extra upstream work center so that you have tons of sprint capacity. And once you have it, run it like crazy for a few days so you build up a nice inventory buffer just in front of that bottleneck operation. That way, even if all of the operations feeding the bottleneck crash and burn for a while, the bottleneck operation can keep chugging along, feeding off that buffer. Obviously, there are a lot of ways to manage a bottleneck. This also means that, as a manager, you need to spend a really large chunk of your time reviewing the bottleneck operation over and over again. If you find that you're spending most of your time monitoring non-essential operations, then you need to reevaluate your priorities, because you're not improving company throughput. Now, it may seem as though we haven't talked about very much accounting in this podcast. Well, that's because I've been reserving that for the next podcast. So far, we've talked about the bottleneck operation and why it's important. Next, we're going to talk about capital budgeting and how you use these concepts to decide what to invest in. And that concludes this podcast. If you'd like more information about throughput accounting, please take a look at my throughput accounting book, which you can buy at stevebragg.com. Or you can sign up for my free newsletter, also at stevebragg.com. That's spelled S-T-E-V-E-B-R-A-G-G. If you have any comments, please send an email to bragg.steven@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 303-731-5552. Thank you for listening.